This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. So, embattled Probation Department Commissioner Jack O'Brien has been suspended, but that's not stopping him from speaking out.
Rogue, I mean, I answer the Chief Justice. So, and that's a lot of criticism has been that I'm rogue agency, that, you know, that the commissioner doesn't respond or answer to anybody. I do. And I hear a lot about nepotism and so forth and so on. Chief Justice Mulligan approved all of those appointments.
Now, that word rogue, that's what Governor Deval Patrick called the probation department after a Boston Globe investigation revealed systemic patronage problems, a pay-to-play culture, and lax financial oversight at the probation department. And now there's a three-way battle over how to fix the department. Governor Patrick wants to tighten oversight by putting the probation department under the watchful eye of the executive branch. Senate President Therese Murray says no, the judicial branch is the better option, while House Speaker Robert DeLeo says wait until a new investigation is complete before doing anything, essentially leaving the probation department for now under control of the legislature, where many say its problems began. And as for that investigation, yesterday, Chief Justice of the Supreme Judicial Court, Margaret Marshall, tapped Paul Ware to lead the independent examination of the probation department. Ware is an attorney at the law firm of Goodwin Procter. He has led similar investigations in the past, including the alleged misconduct of a Superior Court judge, and he assisted Attorney General Martha Coakley in investigating the companies responsible for the ceiling collapse in the Big Dig Tunnel. Paul Ware joins us now. Mr. Ware, welcome to Radio Boston.
Good afternoon, Meghna.
So I understand that you've been on the case for less than a day, but you have been in the position of leading these kinds of investigations in the past, as we mentioned. What is the scope of this one, this investigation in the probation department, and what are you hoping to uncover?
Well, as regards the scope of the investigation, at this juncture, it's really fairly wide-ranging, and I can't say that the parameters have actually been defined at this point. There are a lot of allegations that have been made public in the Boston Globe articles and other articles that have occurred over the last several months. And so we'll be looking at a broad range of possible conduct regarding the probation office. And the specific confines of that have yet to be determined.
Mm-hmm. How is it that you proceed in a case like this where you're dealing with a department that has many thousands of employees and the allegations of the misconduct go back many years, at least a decade as well? How is it that you start digging into all of that?
I don't think it's rare for an investigation to encompass a time period that goes back some number of years. I mean, obviously, the older the conduct, the more difficult it is to ferret out what may have occurred. But it's not unusual to be dealing with events that occurred some years ago. And so we will be talking with witnesses, presumably, and looking at documentation that's historical and current. And in that way, try to understand the history of conduct in the department and practices in the department.
And when you say witnesses, does that mean that you plan on speaking with employees of the department, probation workers specifically?
I think that's quite likely. I mean, as you know, from the order of the Supreme Judicial Court, I have been granted subpoena power, and we will be taking testimony under oath. Broadly speaking, in the nature of a grand jury or any kind of investigative body, which can compel the testimony of witnesses.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Ware, you're no stranger to governmental corruption. I mean, you have led other investigations before. I find the variety actually to be quite eye-opening, everything from the Big Dig ceiling collapse to even the working on the federal investigation of Iran, the Iran-Contra scandal back in the 80s. So is there anything from those two previous experiences that you had that you might bring to the table in terms of looking into the probation department?
Certainly the experience of having methodically sifted through evidence under circumstances in which it's both inherent in the process and important to the individuals involved that there be secrecy and that there be protection of individual reputations is an asset. So I think having been through the process and the procedure of investigations, including large investigations, is certainly good background for this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So you consider this one to be a large investigation as well?
Well, I think it's a large department, and of course it affects all of us as citizens here in the Commonwealth. And in that sense, it's wide-ranging. Obviously, the geographic reach of the probation department is throughout the Commonwealth, and the public that's affected is really every citizen of the Commonwealth. So in that sense, it's certainly broad-ranging.
Do you have a sense as to how long the investigation might take?
As you may be aware, the court's order requires a report within 90 days. I think it may not be possible to issue a final report at that stage, but we're going to do our best to move deliberately and aggressively to gather the evidence and understand the facts here so that we can report to the court within a suitable time frame.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's Paul Ware. He's a senior partner at the law firm of Goodwin Procter. He's been appointed by the Supreme Judicial Court to investigate alleged corruption in the Massachusetts Department of Probation. Mr. Ware, thank you so much for joining us.
Very good. Thank you, Magna.
Well, and one man who has paid a lot of attention to corruption issues in Massachusetts over the years is former Attorney General Scott Harshbarger. I spoke with him a little earlier, and I asked for his reaction to the allegations.
What's tragic about this is that probation is such a central agency in the justice system in terms of dealing with supervision, in terms of handling most of the people who are convicted of crimes, in terms of public safety, prevention, treatment, and really having an efficient, evidence-based correctional system. And that's what we've lost here. This is not just another public agency that may be more bureaucratic or more political. This is a vital agency in the justice system that simply has not been a partner for over a decade.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you a little bit more about that, because the legislature moved to remove the probation department from the oversight, at least in hiring, of the judiciary. That's one of the things that sort of triggered the problems that we're seeing now. And at the time, members of the legislature seemed as if they knew problems could emerge, but they were actually okay with that. I mean, Tom Finneran, former right. Speaker of the House, he was indicted for perjury and obstruction of justice in 2005, but he was quoted saying that an increased number of potential political hires isn't such a bad thing. So why would the legislature actually act to create a system where they knew accountability would be diminished or eliminated altogether?
Well, I think the answer speaks for itself. It's because they maintain control. That what the great concern here is that an agency that might be independent, that might be based simply on hiring on the merits, on performance standards, would not be consistent with a culture that tends to favor political hiring, playing politics in this system. It's not all bad. There are some wonderful people who are politically connected who serve in probation, who always have served in any state agency, but when it becomes dominant, it really creates the kind of culture that allows the legislature to maintain control over a major element of the judiciary.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned this culture that may have given rise to this problem, and I think that's one thing that a lot of people are wondering about. Where does this culture come from in Massachusetts politics? It seems that, you know, we've had governors, for example, in the past, Mike Dukakis, who was very keen on good governance. Even Deval Patrick in his first campaign ran on a platform to reform the way things are done on Beacon Hill. But it seems as if no matter who's governor, no matter what the party is in the corner office, that these problems still go on. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think when we talk about the culture, I think part of it is the assumption that that in Massachusetts, at least in these agencies, getting a job is sort of a part of being politically connected, that there for a long time has not been a tradition of independent merit hiring. And that's unfortunate because so many of the really quality people in state government are independent, are qualified, and it taints every public servant. But let's not kid ourselves. The reality of Massachusetts and what many people are now reacting against as citizens is the perception that politics and personal interest and self-interest controls over the public interest and the people's interest. And many people believe, and I say this as a Democrat, that this is part of the problem of a one-party dominated legislature, where the legislature really cannot be checked effectively by a governor or by a second party where there are not contested elections on a regular basis, and we end up with a system where who you know matters a whole lot more than who elected you.
Mm-hmm. You know, on that note, I was just looking at a lot of the conversation that's been happening online about this. And, you know, I found actually this was an article that was published last year in the conservative monthly magazine, The American Spectator. An author there wrote that when Massachusetts looks in the mirror, it sees Minnesota or Nebraska. And when everyone else looks at Massachusetts, they see Louisiana or Illinois. So basically saying there's a cognitive dissonance that persist where Bay State voters talk good government but elect rogues. Is that, I mean, like, are we as responsible as members of government themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it always interests me when people say this is sort of outrageous what we see on Beacon Hill. Well, this is a government of the people, by the people, for the people. I mean, what you see is that we don't participate as citizens. We often don't believe we can make a difference.
And now with the probation department, we're also seeing how different branches of government are pulling in different directions in terms of trying to find a solution here. I mean, Governor Patrick wants to bring the department under the executive, essentially his control. But yesterday, Senate President Therese Murray said, no, we should put it back with the judiciary. And House Speaker Robert DeLeo says, let's do nothing and leave it under the legislature's control until we see what's coming out of Mr. Ware's investigation that was also launched yesterday. So given your experience with looking into these issues and trying to reform and repair when government goes wrong, what would you do to try and fix this problem with the probation department right now?
Well, I think that one of the things that I've recommended and that a group that I'm involved in, Community Resources for Justice, has recommended is exactly the reform that Governor Patrick has proposed, which is that this become part of the executive agency, agencies, that we see this as part of the effort with corrections and parole and public safety to be part of the executive so that there's greater accountability. And I know that this concerns the judiciary, but the fact is that for years people have known about this problem. It has not been addressed. And one of the reasons it hasn't been addressed is because the concern the judiciary has that if they take this on, they will pay a price in the legislature in terms of budgets and other situations. There'll be retaliation. So the only effective check and balance here, in my view, is to have probation be a part of the executive agency so that we can truly have a coordinated partnership in terms of public safety, in terms of reducing crime and violence, and affecting policies about reentry of people who are going to leave prison and leave hopefully less dangerous than when they went in, but when they come into the community, they're going to be supervised effectively by probation.
Mm-hmm. So you don't see a problem that Therese Murray says might emerge in terms of separation of powers if you put the probation department under the executive?
Well, of course there's a problem, but right now this is not about what we put around the boxes. This is about the question is there a belief that we must fundamentally change the way we deal with probation in this Commonwealth? And if people are going to, you know, you can make arguments that we should keep it in certain places, but the real issue is after this sort of headlines go by here, will there be staying power for the kind of systemic reform that goes to the culture, the quality of people who are hired and supervised and performance standards, and where can we best attain that?
And Mr. Harshbarger, if I may ask, we've been speaking a lot about problems with the culture of Beacon Hill and how government is run in Massachusetts. Given that, do you see that Commissioner Jack O'Brien at the probation department may be being treated as a scapegoat here?
Well, I'm sure that he feels that way. I'm sure that he feels that, you know, there's been a Globe Spotlight team and somebody's head has to roll, and it's just mine. And all I was doing, he will say, is I was doing what the legislature and others wanted me to do, and other people could have stepped in before. And I think what the problem is, he is the leader. Leaders should be held accountable for this. But the real issue is much deeper than that. How does this organization function? And if we only think we can take off, we can just change the leadership without changing the culture, we will be in the same bind that we are in now several years from now.
That's former Attorney General Scott Harshbarger. He's now senior counsel at the law firm Proskauer Rose LLP. Up next, the newest summer camp in New England, one especially for transgender kids. Stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.